Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:58 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 16th, and Iran must feel like all of their Christmases have come at once because the energy crisis in Europe has reignited the possibility of a deal to allow Iranian oil back onto the market. Of course, you're going to have a good number of people being very skeptical about any kind of deal made, but Europe is desperate. So there is obviously an incentive to come to some sort of arrangement that would allow Iranian oil back onto the market. And now we're looking at Brent crude down $3 today. It looks like completing top formation and at least opening up the potential for a reversion back down towards the 1,000-day moving average. So that could shave another $20 off the price from where we are right now. And that's potentially going to take some of the volatility out of the industrial resources and other commodities markets. The cost of production of manufacturing, or I guess smelting down just about any metal, is heavily influenced by the price of energy. So we're seeing zinc smelters shutting down in Europe. Now, we need to look at sufficient amounts of back history to put the move recently seen in context. So zinc prices got up to a new all-time high, pulled back, but we're now seeing it consolidate above the 3,000 level, and that's potentially a first step above the base. So, as long as the 3,000 level is holding, that's going to offer at least the potential that the higher price point can be sustained. Then BHP Billiton announced earnings in here today, and they had record returns. So the share is also bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and is back in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, BHP has always had a choppy chart, and it's best bought following occasional setbacks during commodity bull markets. So at least commodity prices are holding up reasonably well, and that's certainly helping to support BHP in the short term. Even though we still have this great deal of uncertainty about what's likely to happen in China. So they are beginning to support the market with by shaving the interest rate, not cutting it in a big way. And the stock market is putting in potentially a higher reaction low. Now there's a lot of uncertainty about what's happening in China right now, both on the economic front and the regulatory front and the geopolitical front. So we can really only pay attention to what's happening in terms of the price action. And this does look like, at least for the moment, a higher reaction low. But the challenge with simply looking at one index is that the banking sector remains under pressure. And we're right back in the region of the lows from 2020, 2018, 2017, and 2016. So this has been a long range, exceptionally volatile, and we're at the lower side of it. And until we see clear evidence that the banks are starting to turn around, well, then that's going to point towards continued liquidity contraction against a background where the government is cutting rates and making more liquidity available. It's that's of course the argument around the liquidity trap, where there's lots of money floating about, but there's no demand for new loans because the primary venue for new loans was the property sector, and property is under a great deal of duress. And the renminbi was weaker in here today, so pulling back to test the lows from back in May. This continues to look like a rate that has further to go. and there's the clear potential the dollar can sustain a move up and through the 6.8 level and potentially test the peaks from back in 2019 and 2020. Now, when we think about how is gold performing? So we've had a meaningful rebound from 1700 back up towards 1800, and now the price is rolling over. There's been a direct correlation with the dollar index recently, or at least an inverse correlation. The dollar has bounced from the 105 area, that's putting pressure on the gold price. Now, the dollar did not hold all of its move on the upside today. And a good part of the reason for that is because the euro was a little bit steadier. The yen was weaker in here today, and Japan hasn't shown any interest in trying to support its currency. And in fact, the weakness in the yen almost compensated for the strength of the euro, even though they have separate weightings. Now, if Europe gets a deal with Iran, then that will remove some of the pressure on the European economy, would help to bring down some energy prices. Now, it doesn't mean that there's suddenly going to be a fresh supply of natural gas. There are no pipelines between Iran and Europe. But natural gas prices did not hold all of the move on the upside in here today. So that's quite a large tail on the candle. And it does suggest that we have a very overbought condition and prices have certainly accelerated. And this exceptional advance is going to kill off demand. We've seen that with those zinc smelters shutting down. That's going to kill off at least some demand for natural gas. So there's the potential here that we've seen a peak of near-term significance. Doesn't mean that the pressure on natural gas supply has suddenly been solved, but we've had a lot of panicky action over the last couple of days. What I found particularly interesting, however, is that the carbon credit price was in positive territory in here today. So it's clearly firming within the range that's been forming now for the last 5 months. Europe is in many respects hamstrung. They are deliberately increasing the cost of energy, and that was before the pressure coming from Russia. So there's this long-term ambition to become energy independent, and they're willing to take the pain in the short term in order to do it. But I don't think they were bargaining on just how much pain that was going to be if Russia wasn't willing to play along. Now, when we think about the stock market, let's just think about the Nasdaq to begin. So we've had a significant rebound from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and we're back in the region of the 200-day moving average. There's been this tendency to think that we're at the end of the interest rate hiking cycle, and that by the time we get around to November, or excuse me, to January, the Federal Reserve will already be cutting interest rates. And that's basically what's been priced into the short end of the bond market. And I'm rather reluctant to take that opinion as gospel. Unemployment rates have not gone up. And let's think for a moment about the regular person. A large, and this is something that I've been sort of mulling over in my head for the last few days. The company, the share prices of the major automotive companies have rebounded quite impressively. So Ford was up again in here today, and GM was also up in a dynamic manner. And these have been are over the last month at least. So these companies have been exceptionally volatile. Now, as they build more electric vehicles, they're likely to build fewer cheap cars. So the margins that these companies have are now enjoying are better than they've enjoyed for a long time. So let me see if I can pull up the their gross margins. And it's unfortunate that we're not getting it immediately, but we can think about revenue. So Cruise for GM is not firing. GM Financial is still a significant part of the company. In the automotive sector, they're still making more money than anything else from internal combustion engines. Now, the big question, of course, is going to be what kind of cars are they going to build? Will they build more electric vehicles and use those to comply with their carbon emissions requirements? And then they'll continue to build more of the SUVs and the larger, higher margin cars. And then will that mean that there'll be fewer small cars available? So, in many respects, it's seeding the market to other vehicle manufacturers like Hyundai or Kia and the Japanese manufacturers. But will those companies then follow the same pattern? Will they build more electric vehicles in order to use those to comply with emissions regulations so that then they can focus the rest of their attention on higher margin, bigger vehicles? Is it going to result in a dearth of cheaper cars? This, I think, is going to be one of the most important points because used car prices have surged and they've probably peaked. But new car prices have also surged. And the automotive companies have seen profits and revenue rise, even though they're producing fewer vehicles. And the only explanation for that is that the price has gone up. Now, the bigger question is that going to price out a significant proportion of the population from ever owning a vehicle? Now, that sounds like good news for a company like Uber or Lyft, but for a lot of people that will want to move into a smaller car and then find that they're unable to afford it, isn't that going to put upward pressure on wages faster than anything else? Because the two big things that regular people spend their money on are rent and auto payments. And when those become unaffordable, they have no choice but to demand higher wages. And if there's an unavailability of smaller, cheaper cars, then that's only going to continue to put upward pressure on wages. And wage growth has not peaked. So then the potential is that we're looking at a longer hiking cycle, and the market isn't pricing that in. So perhaps I'm wrong. Maybe the market is going to continue higher from here. But I'm not willing to concede that point really just yet, because bond yields aren't coming down in a big way. And the yield was in positive territory earlier on today and then gave up part of it in here today. China's yields are certainly coming down, and the differential that China's yields enjoyed relative to the USA has basically eroded. So there's not there was there was a pretty common argument that you didn't need to own China's you didn't need to own China's stock market, but the bonds were way more desirable. But bond yields now are at 2.63%, so you can get a higher yield by buying 10-year treasuries. Now, that suggests that investors are willing to bet that China's economy is going to contract, that inflation is no longer going to be problematic because they're going to be looking at potentially a recession. And there's the real potential that what we're in fact looking at soon is going to be a deflationary surprise. And that's also what money supply growth is pointing towards. So if we look at money supply on a longer term basis, it went up an awful lot, and now it's coming down exceptionally quickly. And that peak was 18 months ago, and usually there's a lagged effect. So there's the real potential that what we're looking at is the peak in the inflation cycle, and it's more likely to be focused on China than anywhere else. And we're starting to see oil prices roll over. So what there is the clear scope here that there's a significant deflationary surprise in the near term. And that's potentially something that's going to require interest rates to fall, but not for a good reason. If we look at China and its role in the wider economy, then there hasn't been a recession in China for an awfully long time. So it's an exogenous risk that is hard to price in because we just don't know what that's going to mean in terms of prices and demand for the exports of other countries. But certainly, I think it's important to pay attention to what's happening with the industrial resources because China is by far the largest consumer. And copper has reverted back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And now it's pausing there. Then, when we think about liquidity, then Bitcoin has paused. Now, it has been exceptionally steady, and the price has risen rather impressively and in percentage terms over the course of the last 2 months without actually breaking the downtrend. We still have a sequence of ranges, one below the last. Ethereum has got the merge coming up, so the price has done better on the upside, but now we're in the region of $2,000. It's the first area of potential resistance. So the price doubled in the last 6 weeks, and now it looks like we're going to get at least some consolidation. Now, I continue to think that the crypto sector is a liquidity barometer. So, if crypto starts to roll over, then that's going to have a knock-on effect for risk. We can think about companies like Apple and Tesla, where a lot of their growth comes from China. And Apple has got almost all the way back up to its peak, and we have a clear short-term overbought condition. So there is obviously potential for at least a pause and consolidation before long. Of course, we don't have clear evidence of downward dynamics in the major markets. The majority of indices have rebounded and are testing their sequences of lower rally highs, but have not had clear downward dynamics to confirm resistance just yet. So, until we see clear downward dynamics, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But if asset prices push back up and wage demand growth persists, then that's only going to enhance the potential for interest rate hikes. And we still have an inverted yield curve. Generally speaking, it's when the yield curve spread pushes back up through zero, rather than how far it contracts, that the real trouble for stock markets is evident. And we're just not there yet. In fact, it's quite normal to see that stocks do well following the initial inversion, and it takes time for the tightening to take effect. And when it does, then we start to see negative economic events proliferate. So we're just not there yet. This is normal that the pass-through mechanism of tightening liquidity takes time to become evident in economic statistics. But ultimately, it will translate into tighter financial conditions, more difficult environments for corporations, lower corporate profits, and higher unemployment. So it's really then only a question of how far are we going to see a rebound before interest rates start to come back down amid a panicky environment about global deflationary forces. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.